Hey, welcome to the film podcast. Yes, I always, there's a second after I say the name of the podcast where I doubt myself. I'm like, did I say it right? Did I say it with a French accent? How did I say it?
So I feel like I hold my breath every time you start it. I'm like, is he going to do it?
Yeah. So
as I say, always, just don't doubt yourself anymore. Just go with what your gut says.
Yo, wait, this is Le Film Podcast. So as always, I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Kevin.
And today we have a guest Skyping in, Eric Peterson.
Hello.
Welcome. Thanks for being on here again.
No problem. I enjoy it.
I feel like you're just a regular now. So
okay. Well, I'm honored.
I feel like I don't have to introduce you, but give us a little bit of about yourself, a little background.
Well, I'm a music and film and book nut, and I found your podcast via Morris and the Love That Album podcast, which I contribute to. And, you know, I live in Michigan. I work in a library. You know, I've been a big film and music and book fan. I always say I'm an information addict pretty much my whole life. So I like to talk about films and especially non-mainstream kind of off the beaten path stuff.
Very cool.
And I have a blog. It's called therestlesskind.blogspot.com. And it's been didn't do a lot with it in 2012, but previous to that, I did write a lot about books and music and films. So,
very cool. And then you are also a contributor on Love That Album.
Yes. And I also contribute to a podcast called Outside the Cinema, which is a cult film podcast. And I do a music segment for them each week.
Oh, very cool. I feel like I know a lot of like the main, like mainstream podcasts, but I feel like not until I met you and like Brian Sauer am I getting to know like the, I guess you would call the indie kind of like podcast.
Yeah, there's definitely this under, not underground, but this community, this kind of indie film community with, you're gonna find all kinds of stuff. There's a new one called The Feminine Critique that's really good. There's a guy from Australia who does Paleo Cinema and the Martian Drive-In podcast. You know, Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, which I know Brian's been involved with.
Yeah.
All sort of connected, and a lot of it's on the Facebook pages. So you found out a lot of information, a lot of different opinions, but it's a great community of people.
Yeah. And there's a lot, I feel like there's a lot of support, you know, for each other. Like I'm finding a lot of like guys that are like, hey, I listen to your podcast. And then like, I'm like, oh, I didn't know you had a podcast too. So I've started to listen to a bunch of podcasts. So
very cool. Very cool.
I have a long drive, so it I could fit them all.
Podcasting is for commuting.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Jenny, you're getting into a couple more podcasts.
Yeah, I am. I started with Nerdist, and I'm slowly getting more of them.
Yeah. But I feel like you just got into them like a couple months ago.
I actually did. I've been doing this podcast for over a year now, and I just now started listening to other podcasts. It's really awful, but definitely putting getting my hands dirty, I guess, with it.
Your feet wet.
That's the word. Getting my feet wet. Yeah.
It's interesting because podcasts are a lot like music or movies that you start with kind of mainstream stuff. And then from there, you know, you find where your interests move to and you move around and you're like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then you can move on to something else and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's complete. Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. right now I'm in the indie world of podcast. I like it. And then, you know, there's a lot of like really cool, like horror, like just specifically horror podcasts, like horror film podcasts. So it's really cool. All right, let's get into it. Any movies we've seen in theaters? Eric, you want to start off?
Anything sure. You've seen in theaters? I've seen two things recently. One of them is actually The Miami Connection. Are you guys familiar with this film?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they had a showing here in town at, we have a historic theater called the Michigan Theater that's been around 85 years. And they've had everything there from concerts to plays to my high school graduation. And they showed The Miami Connection on Saturday. Beforehand, our local comic shop had a action VHS art show and swap meet. I wound up buying a copy of the film Night Flyers, which is a 80s sci-fi film that notable for two reasons. One is the book was written by George R.R. Martin of Game of Thrones fame. Ooh. And then also it stars Catherine Mary Stewart, which is why I bought it. But anyways, so after that, we went and saw, my brother and I went and saw The Miami Connection with some friends on the big screen, and it was a lot of fun.
Very cool. 35 millimeter print?
I'm not sure if they did digital or what, but if they were kind of experimenting to see if the whole draft house film kind of indie cult thing was going to fly locally, and it had a decent turnout. In fact, when we get to my honorable mentions for our topic tonight, I'm going to talk about another showing at the Michigan Theater that did sell out. But the other thing I saw recently was Parker.
Yeah, with the Jason Statham, right?
And that's right. Yes. Yeah. Now, is anybody else a fan, interested, know what it's all about?
This feels like it's a Chuck Norris, not Chuck Norris, a Charles Bronson like remake.
Okay. All right. Does anybody know who Richard Stark was?
No.
No.
Okay. Who's seen Point Blank?
I have.
With Lee Marvin. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I have.
The Outfit with Robert Duvall?
Yeah, I have.
Or The Split with Jim Brown?
Yeah.
Or Payback with Mel Gibson?
Yes.
Slayground with Peter Coyote?
No.
All right. They're all based on a series of books by Richard Stark, who was the writer. Donald Westlake was one of the great crime writers of the 60s and 70s. So Parker is the first film made from one of the Parker novels that he wrote under the name Richard Stark that's actually used the name Parker. And I'm a big fan of the Parker books. They're these great driving heist stories mainly. I would say that at the top you've got The Outfit with Robert Duvall playing the character, and Lee Marvin in Point Blank is like the two best. And then below that is Payback. And then I would put Parker kind of in the middle. I gave it a C+. The main thing was J-Lo. She kind of dragged the whole thing down every time she showed up.
Wow.
Statham was fine. I could deal with some of the nitpicks that the Parker hardcore fans had. But it was just like she was in a different film. So has anybody seen the movie The Hot Rock with Robert Redford, or The Bank Shot with George C. Scott?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen that one, okay. The second one.
So Donald Westlake was trying to write a Parker book, and Parker had to keep stealing the same object over and over, and it turned into a comedy. So we spun off another series called the Dortmunder series, which is comic heist films – or I'm sorry, comic heist books. They made a couple films. It felt like J-Lo was in one of those.
Oh, wow.
A little too light, a little too comedic. Overall, like I said, I gave it a C+. I saw it. I want there to be more Parker films. I want to see – the character get a chance to get out into other venues.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to happen. Luckily, are any of you guys comic fans?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. There is a series of Parker comics that have come out the last couple of years that are really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Darwin Cook, highly recommended stuff. So
I got to check that out. That's how I feel about Jack Reacher. Like I really, okay. really, really enjoyed. I mean, that movie barely, I had to take it off this list, today's list, but it was on there for a while. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Let's see. Anything else? Anybody else seen in theaters? Or Eric? Anything else?
No, that's the last two things I saw.
Very cool.
I saw Lincoln finally.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You saw a screener of it?
I saw a screener of it. Yeah, not in the theaters.
What did you think?
I'm not a big historical movie fan. Like, I have a couple historical movies that I really enjoy because I didn't know the story.
Oh, okay.
But I knew what was coming. I don't know. Okay, Daniel Day-Lewis, fantastic as that part. Sally Fields, fantastic. But I don't know. I mean, the whole cast in general was fantastic. But it's just, there was something about the story that I was like, I feel like I'd never need to watch this movie again.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those Spielbergs where you're like, yeah, for me it was that it wasn't a Lincoln movie. It was it was about this amendment. You know what I mean? And it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't.
It was. I mean, visually, it was really.
Oh yeah.
It was really awesome. They had a lot of really long still shots that Ricardo, I'm sure, loved.
No, I like the movie. It's just not a movie that I'm probably going to own.
Yeah.
Or will watch again. So.
Is it a one viewing kind of a deal?
Yeah, for me it is. And it's not because it's not good. It's just because, I've seen it. I've experienced it. I'm moving on, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of,
Yeah.
It's good.
Kevin, did you see anything?
A while ago, I saw The Last Stand.
Oh, it was good.
It was great.
You weren't here last week, but it was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. I literally just came in from watching Warm Bodies.
Oh.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah?
I didn't think I was because I was like, and I had free tickets to go see it. So I'm like, ah, screw it. I'll just go see it. Get it out of the way. And it was really fun. I think what made it for me, and I think you'll like this, Eric, is that all the music, it's really music driven because there's not a lot of dialogue with Nicholas Holt. He uses a lot of music. I don't think I'm giving anything away. The zombie kind of collects things, Nicholas Holt's character. And one of the things he collects is vinyl. And that's kind of how he communicates in the beginning through music. And they had a lot of good stuff, like, you know, some Bob Dylan, some Bruce Springsteen. So there was a lot of cool stuff that they were playing, a lot of cool music.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And at the end, they play The National. So you can't go wrong with The National. So
no.
They had me at The National.
It wasn't too cutesy?
At parts. I mean, the movie has a lot of problems. I mean, but but overall, it was fun. Like, definitely, it's a movie I'd watch again. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, is it a see in the theater or is it a get on DVD? Or...
I think it's a get on DVD or video on demand. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. There's no need to go see that, you know, see it in the big screen. So.
Yeah.
But overall, really fun. And I don't know. I always find it weird when John Malkovich gets involved in like really small projects like this. I mean, not small, but really small parts. And I'm like, that's really cool that actor of his caliber is like, yeah, I'll go and play somebody's dad.
You know, I think we're seeing more and more actors realize that, you know, they can go and do the big paycheck movie and then they can do whatever they want that's kind of small and niche-y and kind of get a chance to do other things but also kind of preserve their legacy when people go, yeah, okay, they made that big movie to, you know, pay off the house or whatever. But then they spent 3 months or 2 weeks or whatever working on the small little film.
Yeah. And I mean, this isn't not a small film per se, but still, it's just something that I'm sure he was like, hey, it's something my nieces and nephews and, you know, if he has kids, they could watch, you know?
Yeah. Oh, there's that aspect of things.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. And it's a kind of like, it's a really cute movie and, you know, I liked it. It was really cool. And then, what else did I see? I think that was it. I didn't see anything else. Did we go to the movies last week, Kevin? Just Last Stand, right? That's it then. That's it for us. And Eric, do you have a stream of the week by any chance?
You know, I still do not have streaming. Oh, so
there you go. Well,
you know what though? I know that Hotel Noir is on demand somewhere, and I desperately want to see that. So, are you familiar with that at all?
I think Sebastian no.
Gutierrez, who did Electrolux and
yes.
Women in Trouble?
Yeah.
I really love his stuff. I loved Electrolux, and I got Girl Walks Into a Bar recently, which I like. And so I mean, I've heard good things about Hotel Noir. So,
I got to check it out. I with him, I'm like, it's kind of sometimes I like stuff, sometimes I don't. Is he married to Carla Gugino? I think he is.
Or they're involved somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love her. I think she's a great actress. And
yeah,
great
me too.
Presence. So, and I like the material that she picks. Because she could easily be making stupid romantic comedies or, you know, big paychecks or whatever. But it seems like she kind of balances it. She'll do Sucker Punch and then she'll turn around and do a little film with her friends. So
Yeah. And I like seeing her pop up on like TV. She pops up all the time.
Californication.
Entourage, Californication, yeah.
So. Who is she on Californication?
She played
his lawyer
for a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She's in Sin City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, yeah. She's in Sin City.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the list then. And today we're talking about our favorite films of 2012. So
Finally. Do we decide if we're doing 5 or 10?
We'll just do 5 and then we'll do 6 through 10 as honorable mentions, you know?
Okay.
How's that?
Are we trying not to overlap?
No, I think if it's your number 5, then say it's your...
Okay.
We'll just talk about it.
Don't look.
Know? Sorry.
There's going to be a lot of overlap, and that where there's not, it's going to be because people haven't seen films.
Yeah. So why don't I have Eric start us off?
Okay. Well, my number 5 is a little film based on a long-running series. Probably at this point, the movies outnumber the books, and it's Skyfall.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool.
I've always been a big Bond fan. You know, he's been through some rough times, some ups and downs.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I figured, oh, I'll go see Skyfall, even though I did not care for whatever the last one was. And, oh, it was great.
Yeah.
And one thing I have not heard getting mentioned a lot that I really, really appreciated was about a third of the film is set actually in England and in London itself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, which we never see in a Bond film.
No, no. You
know, goes to the office and then you get sent off somewhere exotic.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was gritty and it was engaging and it looked great and it, you know, it was very human. Yeah, I just really liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed because it mixed like that like Christopher Nolan thing that he's doing now where it's like he's trying to make everything more real, and it also mixed like nostalgia, like just things that we loved about all the Bond movies, everything.
Most definitely.
I think it blended like a really good mix of genres into one film, and it would kind of just like ease into each like genre throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
The other thing is the performances across the board were solid.
Yeah, yeah. I like the reintroduction of characters, you know, like, you know, I don't know, is he M? The guy who makes his gadgets?
Q.
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying not to give any spoilers. Yeah, the guy Q, I like that actor too. He's in a bunch of like BBC TV shows, and the last thing I saw him in was Cloud Atlas. So really cool actor. So it was on my list for a while, and then, you know, all these like award season movies knocked it out of the running. So
I see that.
Very cool. Good way to start us off. Number five, Skyfall. Kevin, what's your number five?
Okay, so my number five is Seven Psychopaths. This movie got me right from the start. The opening to the film just is amazing. The two actors banter and just the kind of the way the other character just approaches them. And it just, he hooks you. And the one thing that I love about the writer-director is his writing is amazing. And he doesn't follow the norms of a story. And he takes you on this like ride. And he also just writes really dark, funny shit. And I really think that Sam Rockwell should have been nominated for an Oscar for supporting actor because he just steals every scene that he's in.
Can I ask, is anybody going to have films where they're going to say that somebody should have been nominated for an Oscar that wasn't?
I think I might. Yeah, I might have some. So if you think somebody should have been nominated, you throw it out there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool.
I enjoyed this movie. I was just talking to somebody yesterday about it. Our friend Brandon Bennett, how the trailer to this movie. Well, the trailer to every like Martin McDonagh movie is nothing.
Yeah, no.
What the film is actually like. So it definitely, you're always surprised when you go see it and you're like, oh, is that what they were trying to say in the trailer? Yeah, they completely failed, but okay. But it still got me in theaters, you know? So, and I'm glad the trailer is like that because it gives people like, it hooks them into the theater, but it gives them something better, you know? That's what I think. I don't know. Maybe some people are disappointed, but I really enjoyed it. So that is your number five, Jenny.
All right, so my number five, I chose Cabin in the Woods.
It's my number four.
My number four.
It's my number six. So
nice.
Very cool.
I loved this movie. I like horror movies anyways. I grew up kind of liking horror movies since middle school, so that aspect, I've liked all of them. It doesn't matter how cliche or how obvious any of them are. Just this one had so much more than any horror movie I've ever seen. It's got that Joss Whedon nerd going for it. And I loved that. I don't want to give any spoilers away. But one of the characters...
Well, I think enough people have... Yeah, I think enough people have seen... Enough people...
Well, just one of the characters that normally would die in any other horror movie ends up being one of the last ones alive. And that alone was like one of my favorite parts of the entire movie.
Yeah, yeah. I just like this movie all the way around. It just kind of like, it was like a love letter to horror films and a love letter to like movie geeks, I feel.
Definitely. I want to ask, is anybody familiar with the Robert Rodriguez film, The Faculty?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you see the parallels between what they did in Cabin in the Woods and they did in The Faculty as far as the stereotypical characters in those type of films?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
Okay. The other thing, and I hope this isn't a spoiler, I absolutely loved the little flashes of things going on in other countries.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant. Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's a movie, those little things are movies unto themselves, because you're like, oh man, I wish they should make shorts of like everything that's happening in the other countries.
Exactly. Well, you know, this is one of three films on my list that I saw in the theater twice.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
I saw this twice.
Yeah, so I remember watching it and being like, is there another Showtime right after this? Because I want to watch it again right now.
Yeah.
I also think it did definitely, the second viewing held up really well, and you pick up on things that are kind of foreshadowed that you wouldn't pick up on until you saw the whole film.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. And then on the second viewing, yeah, totally. It's like you're just like trying to catch all those little things on the second viewing. You're like, oh, you're trying to like feed yourself on all the things, the creatures on the board, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Every little thing is really, yeah.
I like to think of this film as this past year's Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I think that's a good one, too. This is way better, but Tucker and Dale was fun. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's better, but as far as playing with the genre
in a fun way,
kind of winking and knowing what it's about.
The only reason that I liked the first viewing more than the second viewing was because I'm huge into movie surprises. And going into it, I had absolutely no idea that it was going to be a planned whatever it was. Like, I didn't know that there was going to be even two different
settings.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't get that. From the trailers, I couldn't catch that. So that alone made me like the first viewing more than the second one. But I feel like I should watch it even again to catch all the extra things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is one of two movies where I've had to, like, when somebody's over, I'm like, hey, I'm going to put this movie on. And they're like, no, I don't want to watch that. And like, please, just watch the first 10 minutes. And especially with this one, I had to, like, because I played it for somebody who didn't like horror movies. And they were like, it's too scary. Please turn it off. And I'm like, no, please, just wait for it. Wait for it. And they're like, oh, my God, it's so scary. Oh, no, turn it off. Like, I'm like, it's not even that scary. Just stay with it. Like, every 10 minutes, like, they would turn around and look at me and, like, glare at me.
When's it not going to be scary?
Yeah, it was Nat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she kept, like, glaring at me, and I'm like, please, just sit down. Just wait for it. And then when the movie was over, she's like, I'm glad you made me stay through it. And nice. I'm like, I told you. The only other film that's happened with was JCVD.
Very good.
I kept telling people, I know you're going to laugh at me. But just watch the first 10 minutes. If you don't like it, you could leave. And everyone, like clockwork, would stay through the whole movie and be like, yeah, you're right. Van Damme's awesome in this movie. So, very cool. I like your pick. Yeah. It's my number 6. It's Jenny's number 5. And both of your guys is number 4, right?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. My number 5 is Argo.
My number 3.
Yes.
Nice. Honorable mention.
Yeah. Honorable mention.
This movie, I had seen the documentaries, I had read the articles, I knew what was going to happen, and it was still really intense, and halfway through the movie, I'm like, I don't know if these guys are going to make it out of here.
I know.
And I had read the books and seen the documentaries, so it's really cool that when a movie where you know the ending already, it still surprises you. So it was really fun, really well directed. The cinematography was amazing. It didn't surprise me at the end when I saw who did the cinematography, Rodrigo Prieto. So it's really fun, and I mean it's a fun ride. Like it's really good when you go to see a suspense movie, and this is more like a spy thriller. But it's really it's a roller coaster of a ride. It's fun, and it's funny. I've watched it for the third time now. And this time at the end, spoiler alert, when they say, hey, you've now crossed over Iran's, we've crossed over, we're now.
We can serve alcohol now.
Yeah, we can serve alcohol now. And everyone, like, cheers. And everyone on the plane's like, these guys are alcoholics, man. They're excited about the alcohol. So it's fun to see, like, the other passengers' reactions. But, yeah.
You know, it also had a great supporting cast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Give a shout out to Michael Parks, who showed up for just a minute, but he was playing Jack Kirby. You guys know who Jack Kirby is?
The comic book?
Yes. Right? Yeah. Who was basically Stan Lee's partner in creating the Marvel Universe. Yep.
Very cool. I didn't catch that.
I didn't catch that either. Yeah. Now I need to rewatch it so I can catch that.
My brother and sister went to see the film without me. after I'd seen it. And my brother was kind of iffy. And they got home and my sister said, you should have told him that it had Planet of the Apes and Jack Kirby. And I was like, oh, okay.
And then just all the cast, the supporting cast, like you mentioned, like it, I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's that girl from that movie. And that's, you know, like Rory Cochrane.
Oh, so good.
So good.
It was so good and like really kind of unrecognizable at, you know, from what you know him as. It's like he's such a good actor and I'm surprised he doesn't get cast in more like mainstream stuff.
Cause, you know, he's one of those guys that in the early 90s was in, you know, Love in a 45 and he was really good in that. And Empire Records. And now Records. I don't even know what Dazed he's doing besides this.
Yeah, yeah. He was on a TV show for a while, wasn't he?
He was on one of those CSIs, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was one of the tech guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is my number five. Eric, what is your number four?
Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Kevin, that's your number four?
That's my number four as well. All right.
So, Jenny.
Back to me. What's up? All right. So, I think my number four is probably not on anyone's list, and I'm very okay with it. I've seen this movie probably two or three times, and I love it every single time I watch it. It's just everything that I personally want in a movie, not being a very big film geek or anything like that. But my number four is 21 Jump Street.
Nice. Barely missed my honorable mentions, but that was a great, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I loved it. I was surprised by Channing Tatum. I don't think I've ever seen him in a funny role before this, and he blew me out of the park. And Jonah Hill was fantastic. I loved everything about this movie. I thought it was hilarious. And anyone who likes just comedy movies should go see it.
Yes, you will.
This is one of the few films I saw in the theater this year that there was a scene that actually got me choked up.
Oh, really?
I'm serious. I was at the right age to watch the show when it was on, and there was two cameos.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Characters that I had remembered fondly from my youth, and that got me really choked up.
I should have watched the show. I never watched the show, but my sister owns the season 1 and 2 on DVD, I think, and I should have like watched it before I went, but I never did.
It's not great, but there are certain moments from that series that stick with me. Little just things. And then also there was a lot of young actors and actresses who we've seen as adults and some who we haven't, who had, you know, had roles on that show. So,
yeah, a lot of people came from that show, didn't they? I feel like a good bit of people came.
Well, Richard Grieco, hello.
Hello.
But no, this is one of the movies where it definitely surprised me. Excuse me. And it was just such a fun movie. It was just like fun, entertaining. And those two guys, I'm sure they're going to do sequels to this because it's just, they were too funny together.
Yeah. Ice Cube was so funny too. He worked fantastic as that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know who directed this. Do you guys know who directed this?
I do not remember offhand.
Yeah,
Jenny's pulling up. But and all the supporting cast was
Phil
funny
Lord
as well.
And Chris Miller?
Oh, they're the guys. This is their first feature film. They did a Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, okay.
Which was a lot of fun. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because this was their first like live action movie. So yeah, very cool for those guys. And for their first movie, it's funny. I was just listening to an interview with Joe Carnahan, like literally before we started the podcast, and where he talks about how he's glad he didn't do Mission Impossible, you know, 3 after he did Narc. Mm-hmm. And how he's like, I feel like you have to work up your way to those big films. And he was talking about like how sometimes when you get that big chance to do that big $200 million movie, he's like, that's why those guys sometimes choke. And, you know, he was talking about the guy who's doing 47 Ronin. This is coming out this year. And he's talking about how that guy's having a lot of problems with the studio. And he's like, you just, you know, with experience, you develop the knowledge to know what not to do. That's what comes with age and doing a couple of films before you get to your shot for a big movie. But sometimes there's those guys that just, they get a shot like these guys. I mean, it wasn't a huge budget for this movie, but like they just kind of knock it out of the park and like they just kind of really know what they're doing. And I thought this movie was really good.
I saw an interview with Dave Franco that some guy like went up to him one time and was like, "Oh, you know what? You look like that guy from 21 Jump Street." And he's like, "He's like, oh yeah, that Dave Franco guy. He seems pretty cool." And he goes, "No, he seems like a total douchebag." Like right to his face, and he's like, "Oh yeah, okay, thanks." he seems pretty cool.
Yeah, again, all the supporting cast of this movie was funny as well. The guy from New Girl. The guy that plays Jake.
Oh, yeah.
Plays the principal.
No, Nick, but he's Nick, Jake yeah, Johnson. Yeah.
And also the girl from United States of Tara.
Oh, yeah. I love her.
Yeah.
I do.
She was really good.
She was so funny when she was on the drug. Funny. That drug in general, that is hilarious. That whole, like, they have all those different layers of the drug.
All the stages of the drug.
Yeah, the stages. Anyways, it's funny.
So very cool. Very interesting number four, I think. I wouldn't have.
I figured I was going to be a little different.
Yeah, I like it. My number four is The Gray.
Nice.
Speaking of Joe Carnahan,
which I have yet to see, but yeah. I do have a copy. I just haven't had a chance to watch it.
I think
stop the podcast right now and go watch it.
I think it's really well made. Like, I mean, I don't know. This movie. The first time I saw it, it was surprising because it came out really early in the year. So it was like, is this a bad thing? Because usually they kind of wait for these type of movies for the, you know, later in the year. But I don't know what was up with the studio, but it was, to me, it was amazing. Really, some of the best acting, like, I've seen Liam Neeson do, and has one of my favorite actors, character actors. I guess now he's mainstream because he's in
New Captain America. Yeah, he's becoming more of a leading guy.
Yeah, and it's just a guy who kind of, every time I saw him, steals a show, and that's Frank Grillo.
Okay.
He, every time I've seen him, like, whether it's, like, Warrior or, like, any small part he has, he kind of always knocks it out of the park, and he did it with this one. He played one of the smaller characters. And is it Dermot Mulroney?
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's in it.
Yes, he is amazing in this, too. Again, one of those guys where you're, like, you see the credit roll at the end, and you're like, Dermot Mulroney was in this? What? Oh my god, he was the guy with the glasses. Oh crap. It was really well done, really kind of, to me it felt really minimalistically done, like just, you know, really using the elements and not a lot of CGI, except for the wolves and stuff, but they really shot, you know, on location, and, you know, if you listen to the commentary, you see how many problems they had with, like, just literally, like, not hearing the actors and it you know, the blizzards, so... I really enjoyed this movie.
This is a film that's getting a lot of buzz in the indie podcast sphere. That I know I've heard a lot of podcasts talking about it. So I have a feeling it's going to have a big life on cable and on streaming and on DVD.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it had a lot to say. It was a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be, especially with like a second and third viewing. Like I'm like, wow, it's a lot
it didn't
deeper.
Get a lot of people to go see it, did it? It didn't have a very big crowd.
It made its money.
Yeah, for the budget, okay. It did really well.
Well, its budget was so low.
It was really, really low. For its budget, it did really well, especially for, like, you know, for a Joe Carnahan movie. I know the A-Team kind of bombed, you know, with expectations of how much money it was going to make, but this definitely made its money back and more, so.
That's good.
You know, hearing interviews, he definitely wants to keep kind of making these, like, close to his heart type, like, films, you know.
When I like that he's almost stepping away, because for a while he was very stylistic in his directing style. And now, like, he has so many just quiet, simple shots in this film that are very poetic. And I like that he's moving away, because sometimes the style in some of his movies just takes away from what's going on in the actual film.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
It looks like, according to IMDb, his next film is actually going to be a TV movie, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. I think it's done. I think I follow him on Twitter. I think he just finished shooting that. So that should be interesting to see him take another medium. And but, yeah, I agree with Kevin. Like, in the beginning, especially with, like, his first movie, Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane, that was really stylized. Narc kind of was stylized, but in a weird indie way.
Yeah.
But it was still – he kind of created a style unto its own. And then I think that was the first movie where he kind of, like, not a lot of people will give him credit for this, but I think he pioneered the like handheld, you know, he brought it back where it was really, really, like, over, like, you You really saturate your movie with a lot of handhelds.
Yeah, with a lot of shaky handhelds.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel like he didn't get a lot of the credit, and it kind of went more to like Paul Greengrass and stuff, but I think he was one of the first guys to kind of like bring it back. And then he really got really stylized with like Smoking Aces, which I really liked. And then, of course, the A-Team was really stylized, but mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. But this, again, like, I like the when like directors really evolve, and that's kind of what I like about like Steven Soderbergh, where he kind of every movie's a different director. That's how I feel about him. But that's what I'm liking about Joe Carnahan. So definitely check it out if you get a chance, Eric. And
okay, oh, like I said, I have a copy. It's just a matter of getting to it.
Very cool. All right, so what is your number three?
Mine? Are we back to me? Okay. Yeah. My number three is a film that I like to think of as Wes Anderson's Hunger Games, and that's Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. My number one.
My brother and I went – I live with my brother and my sister, and I go to movies with them fairly often. And I love, love, love Moonrise Kingdom. My top three were really – almost any of them could have been number one, two, or three. But I just thought this was a great little fairy tale that harkened back to an era that people don't really explore all that much. And there's one or two scenes that really I was like, whoa, it's the Hunger Games. And then the other thing I kept thinking is these khaki scouts. It's about a pair of kids that run off into the woods, and one of them's a khaki scout. But the khaki scouts, I kept thinking, you know, these kids are going to be in Vietnam in a couple of years. So
yeah, that's right.
But and then the supporting the adult cast was amazing. I just everything about, and I'm a complete mark for Wes Anderson. So,
oh yeah, I loved it. I loved everything about it. Mostly the kitten, but other things were good too. I loved the scene that you're talking about, the Hunger Games scene. It was scary and hilarious all at the same time. I loved it so much. They're all like staring down at each other, and then you don't see anything, and then they're just like all running. It's
and then
hilarious.
They have all the weapons. And you're yeah. like, where did they get the spike club?
Yeah. God, so, it's so funny.
Someone like one of the kids, you imagine like the kid making that spike club. Like,
yeah. Got a merit badge for that one, I'm sure.
Yeah. And this, I would have, that'd be interesting to see Wes Anderson do like the Hunger Games.
Well, my thought was, you know, Wes Anderson's got this thing about people doing their jobs and finding a group to belong to and wearing uniforms. So my thought is, I want him to do a war movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see him do like a Stripes kind of the light comic war movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be really interesting. I feel like Wes Anderson needs to explore a lot more genres. And like,
so. We'll get him to remake Kelly's Heroes or something. Yes.
That would be great.
But good pick. It definitely is. Let me see. What? So it's your number one. I mean, sorry, it's your number three, right, Eric?
Yes.
Is it in your list, Kevin?
It is not.
And it's in your list?
My number one.
Your number one. It's my number nine, by the way. So
nice.
Very cool.
I actually liked it. Shut up. Sorry. Go ahead. I was just gonna say I liked it actually better the second time I saw it than the first time, surprisingly.
I also want to give a shout out to Roman Coppola, who was the co-writer, who is Ricardo knows. I'm a big fan of his first film and can't wait for his new one to come out.
Yeah It's funny, last year I really wanted to get on this thing. I think a year ago I think it was Dell had this thing with I forgot what hotel chain, where you had to submit a screenplay, like a 10-page screenplay. Mm-hmm. And they chose like a couple of like unknown directors to kind of write spots for this hotel chain and the computer, the Dell computers. It was Intel, but anyway, it was this cross promotional thing, and you had to incorporate the hotel and a computer. And I really wanted to get on that, and I wrote a screenplay, but I didn't get on. But I've seen some of the films that came out of it, and it's funny because at first they had said it was like, oh, it's we want all unknowns, but then they went with like directors who are working. Like I'm like, that's weird. How do these guys win this competition? But some of them are really fun. I know Roman actually did one of them, and okay. it stars Jason Schwartzman, and you should seek it out if you get a chance. But it's really funny. I dug it.
Cool.
All right. Where are we at, Kevin?
My number three. So from the rest of my list, I was a little worried this year. There were a lot of great movies and I enjoyed a lot, but I always just like to look for films that are not only amazing, but also inspire me creatively. And this year was kind of a little scary because for a second I didn't think there was going to be anything that would kind of push me. But my top three are all films that have really, every time I watch them, I'm like, okay, I got to sit down and do some writing. So my number three is The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I've not seen this one yet.
I haven't either yet.
I haven't either.
I really want to.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the films I've just seen in my life that I've connected so much to a main character before, ever. Just relating to things he goes through. Mm-hmm. And it really affected me. And it's very personal. And I'm a hopeless romantic. And it's just got a really wonderful love story of just not feeling like you're good enough for somebody. And then just also just really interesting characters and people that you know you've come across in your life. And just the bonds of friendship. And it's just a really good story about going through that time in high school and adolescence and just finding people that actually you connect with, which can be difficult sometimes in high school. And it's wonderful use of music throughout. And yeah, it's just I just really loved the movie. And afterwards, I was like, okay, I finally had to sit down and write something that I've been thinking about for a while. That's very personal to me. So
cool.
Nice.
Very cool. I like when those movies do that to you, when you're like, oh man, that's a shame that I didn't finish writing that. I should go home and finish writing that. It really kind of like pushes you to like go back to whatever, you know, especially if you're like, whether you're a songwriter or, you know, a writer or painter, where you're like, oh, this movie really inspires me. I got to go back to this thing. And
I find that either really, really good movies do that or really, really bad movies
yes.
do that.
Yes, yes. There's no like in between. You're never watching, you know, something you're like, oh man, this Transformers movie is really, it's really inspiring me. I mean, maybe Transformers 3, but, you know, where you're like, oh man, this was so bad, I could write something better. I'm going to go write a Transformers fan fiction movie.
How close did it come to the book?
Actually, I haven't read the book.
That's oh, okay. Yeah. I loved the book. I read it in high school, and it fit perfectly because it's set in high school.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's the writer of the book is the writer-director of the movie.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sure it's maybe like really probably close. Cut some stuff, but
I need to go see it.
It would probably be very close. It comes out on DVD in like 2 or 3 weeks. I think okay. I'll have to buy it. Okay. But it's the one movie that I'll say that I will always like recommend it to people. And just recently I recommended it to a friend. And afterwards we went on this long walk and just talked about the movie because it's just – if you connect with the movie, you're going to want to talk to somebody. And it's one of those movies where you just think and talk about it afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. I like those. I like those where you can like go to a diner and then like just I miss sometimes like having that relationship with meaning like usually now when I go see a movie with friends, it's like we meet up, we see the movie, then we're gone. And mm-hmm. I miss like, hey, let's go to a diner, have some dinner and then just talk about it. So yeah, very cool. Jenny?
My number three was Argo.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my number three...
That's a good one.
It is. My number three is The Master.
Okay.
I have not seen this yet.
Really. It's really good. I enjoyed it. I think he's one of the guys who I can honestly say, like, I feel like he's one of the masters of film. You know, like, Paul Thomas Anderson, like, I'm sure he'll have movies I don't like, but so far, like, everything, like, is at the highest level of filmmaking for me. That's how I view him. And just, especially this one was really flawless. It didn't speak to me as much as, like, There Will Be Blood. There Will Be Blood is, like, one of my favorites, and it really spoke to me. But this one was still up there. Great performances. And as everybody knows, I really like still movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. There's a lot of really cool, just like reaction moments with like Joaquin and, Philip Seymour Hoffman that are amazing. And I like everyone who watches it. I like everyone like getting their interpretation of what the ending is about. Jenny, like you're not going to watch this for a while.
Yeah,
for a second viewing.
But I have so many questions. I have so many questions, but I feel like I can't. I have to wait to watch it, and that sucks even more because I'm like, I just want to get my questions answered, but it's so intense that it's just too much. But it's I liked it a lot. It's in my honorable mentions too. This is one, like you were talking about, Eric, that well, not nominated, but I feel like Joaquin should win over Daniel Day-Lewis, and I can actually say that now because I've seen Lincoln. I still, because Daniel Day-Lewis, I feel like he does, okay, we get it, you're great. I mean, like, I don't know. I think he was really good as Lincoln, but Joaquin Phoenix just went out of his comfort zone, and
Does he have a comfort zone?
I mean, no, yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, you go back to, like, Parenthood, and he's talking about porn and stuff, so, yeah, I mean.
No, that's true. He is kind of all over the place. But I feel like Daniel Day-Lewis, he doesn't have, like, a comfort zone either, but it's more of you're expecting it from him. Whereas Joaquin, you're almost, like, surprised when you see it. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, I always feel like Joaquin's amazing. And like, I feel like people who, I don't know, I just feel like maybe I've seen more things with Joaquin, like, earlier stuff, where I've seen, like, him, like, be consistently good, where I'm like, oh, this kid is, you know. Wasn't he in Inventing the Abbots?
Yes.
He's awesome in that. Yeah. And, you know, with Billy Crudup and stuff. Have you seen that?
No.
It's really interesting. There's a lot of him, like, in younger roles that I'm like, wow. Especially,
I gotta wonder how much of that was him trying to live up to his brother's legacy, too.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, to this day, people swear up and down that his brother was one of the greatest actors of his generation.
He was.
And if you ever hear Will Wheaton talk, he talks about River Phoenix as having been head and shoulders above everybody else that he worked with.
I agree. I think he was amazing, and I think only time would have told us.
Oh yeah.
But still, I think that he was an amazing actor, and the thing was that we didn't see too many of his, like, adult roles, you know.
Oh, most definitely. We didn't see a lot of range either. He got to cast a lot as a teenager.
So I'd really be interested in seeing, like, where he went as an adult actor. But there's a lot of, like, young, you know, child actors that I love what they, you know, do. Like Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Kurt Russell, even, like, comedically, like, with Jason Bateman, you know. He's doing some great work and stuff, so. But, yeah. I love this movie. I loved the cinematography. I loved everything about it. I loved what it said to me. I mean, personally, like, the end of it, what I got out of it, you know, it was really interesting, and what it said about, you know, quote unquote, I guess not quote unquote. I mean, what it said about Scientology, you know what I mean? And what it said about Ron L. Hubbard and stuff. So
there's one scene where, and this won't give anything away because it's kind of near the beginning actually, but where Philip Seymour Hoffman is interviewing Joaquin Phoenix, and he starts off, Joaquin's just taking it as, like, a complete joke, and he's like, oh, this is hilarious, this is so funny, and then he, like, doesn't let him blink the entire time, where he has to start completely over, and it just really, like, you can feel, like, the pain, and not only the physical pain, but the emotional pain that he's going through, because he's thinking so hard about all these questions. It's a fantastic scene.
Yeah, and
it really is.
And I think, like, that really kind of shows, it does two things, like, you not blinking, it helped the acting, but not only, like, the acting, but, like, the character. The character literally had to pay attention to and listen to what Philip Seymour Hoffman had to say. And it made him kind of be like, okay, I have to answer these questions seriously. And, yeah, like, those emotional scenes after that are pretty amazing, so.
Yeah.
I mean, this film didn't make my list, and it's really only because I didn't really quite connect with it. But I do think, besides my number two, I do think it's probably one of the most perfect films that came out this year, just filmmaking-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Eric, what is your number three, right? No, two, sorry.
Two, okay. So I'm just going to read you a couple of cast members here because it would probably be pretty obvious, but Michael Parks, Tom Savini, Lee Horsley, Jonah Hill, Bruce Dern. Anybody know where I'm going with this? Franco Nero.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Django Unchained. Saw it twice in the theater. Loved it. Loved it. You know, I didn't see Inglourious Basterds in the theater, and I'm kicking myself for it. But this was just so much fun, and it was so good. And I love seeing, you know, Tom Wopat from The Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, come on. This was, it was just – It was great. I hear that there was like a 6-hour cut or a 4-hour cut.
Yeah.
And you just know there's got to be, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that's sitting in the editing room somewhere to make a whole nother film. You know, just Christoph Waltz just knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Walt Goggins, Dennis Christopher. I mean, Tarantino knows what he's doing, period. And, you know, all the controversy about the N-word and the torture and the depiction – doesn't matter. It was a great, great film. It's a film I've already pre-ordered the Blu-ray. I mean, I liked it that much. So
nice.
With this movie, it didn't make my top 10 list.
Okay.
Definitely didn't make it. I really enjoyed it, but this is what I feel. These are my thoughts about it. I really enjoy Tarantino and I enjoy all his movies and they're really entertaining. And I'm really curious to see like the 4.5-hour version because I think there's things that are missing from this that I wish I knew more about. Excuse me. But second of all, I always from I guess a lot of my movies that I really enjoy and I really connect to have something really different than Tarantino's movies, which is in a Tarantino movie, you always, always, always know you're watching a movie. Do you know what I mean? Like it's almost like even he knows, like, hey, this is a movie where and this is a weird thing to express or to articulate, but sometimes when I watch a movie, the lines are blurred where it's like, oh, this could be real people in real life.
Yeah.
Where when I watch Tarantino, it's like, no, these are people, characters in a movie. Where sometimes, you know, you watch like, you know, like even The Master, like I'm like, these people could be real people in real life. So. That's the only thing, like my only like problem with this movie. Well, in general, with his work. Yeah.
You know, I do want to give props to my favorite scene, which is not giving anything away about the movie or the plot. There's a scene where Christoph Waltz is explaining the story of Brunhilde to Django.
Yeah.
And it's just him in the stone wall behind him in the fire. It's just amazing. Yeah. Just the storytelling and just this kind of primitive, it's almost like they're in a cave. Oh, I just love that scene.
I love Christoph Waltz in this. He was fantastic. So yeah.
Yeah. And a person who I think is not getting enough credit is, I think DiCaprio did. I think he was
great.
Yeah, yeah.
I think besides him being amazing in it, it was really brave for him to, in a person of his like caliber to take the risk of doing that character, you know, cause he very easily, I think it's well, like some people, like say you got to go full speed or you're going to get hurt. You know what I mean? A lot of people say that. And that's how I felt about this character. Like if he wouldn't have gone like just full on, like, hey, I'm this horrible character, it easily could have not worked for him. And I hear a lot of stories of him, like him in a couple of the takes when he first started filming, that where he wasn't going full out. And like, I guess, Samuel L. Jackson had to come over and be like, you got to give it all or it's not going to work, man. Like, you just got to do it. And I've enjoyed all of DiCaprio's work, and this is no exception. He was, for me, him and Christoph Waltz were the best part of the movie.
You know, the thing about DiCaprio is I think, like we were talking earlier, that he is one of those guys that is realized that he could be making a boatload of cash doing, you know, generic romantic comedies, but instead he's picking projects he wants to do and he's taking chances, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I feel like I love DiCaprio and I love everything he's been doing, but I feel like he's only working with like five filmmakers.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like he's got to take a chance, and like, I want him to work with so many other people. Like, I'm like, oh my God, like, I wonder what him and Carnahan would do together. Like something like really, really gritty.
I think he needs to pull a Ben Affleck and move out of Hollywood and go out to the East Coast somewhere and find some young talent, or go to England or go to Scandinavia and just find some young director or writer who's got two or three films under their belt that's doing something interesting.
Yeah.
And sit down with them and be like, look, I want to make something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I love DiCaprio, but yeah, that's what I'm missing. Something not in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But everything I've seen him in is amazing. Like I'm always, you know.
So I'm kind of curious, what would not be in his wheelhouse? One of the things I always say about Jim Carrey is I'll never believe he's a great actor until he can play the straight suburban dad support role in something, which we never see. But what would that be for DiCaprio?
That's the thing. I don't know. I can't like pinpoint it. I just know that every time I see him in a role, I'm like, oh, this is a total DiCaprio role. This is like, of course he would do this. I think a little bit with like Django is mm-hmm. that was outside of his wheelhouse, and I especially liked it because he was a villain. Like that's out of his wheelhouse, playing a villain. But this is, I feel, was a little bit. This is a Tarantino villain, which mm-hmm. I feel is a little bit more cartoonish. I don't want to say cartoonish because he's a horrible person, but mm-hmm. He's exaggerated a little bit.
Oh, most definitely.
Where I want to see him play like a real life villain, kind of like I would have enjoyed seeing DiCaprio play Matt Damon's part in The Departed.
Okay,
that would have been interesting to me because. I know Matt Damon did an amazing job because I love Matt Damon and I loved him pre The Departed, mm-hmm. but after The Departed, I literally hated him for like the next 6 months because I hated his character and I'm like, he was amazing in it, but that's why I hate him because I hate his character so much. And I wish DiCaprio would have done that role. That would have been interesting.
Maybe DiCaprio needs to go and do like an HBO series or something.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
That'd be really cool. Yeah. But yeah, that is your number two, right?
Two. Yes.
Very nice. Cool.
One thing I would like to say about it is it made me sit down. That actually, I went to a party this weekend where we watched the original Django, and that movie is amazing.
Okay.
Really?
I've actually seen it, and I enjoyed it, but I would really like to see it with an audience or a group of people.
It's a lot of fun with a group of people.
Yeah, sometimes I watch movies that I like either missed on like the theaters or like it was a little bit before my time, you know, something from mm-hmm. Late 80s or something that I didn't see in theaters, where I'm like, oh, this movie was so good, but I wish I would have seen it with an audience. I want to feel that reaction stuff. So, yeah, I'm glad that there's a lot of theaters that play old movies because you get to experience that.
Cool.
Kevin?
Okay, so my number two, and then this is, I know what Ricardo's number one and two are, and we're going to swap right here. And my number two is Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay, All right.
It's my number one.
It's my number one as well.
My number eight.
Yeah, we swapped here. Kevin's number two is my number one. And But Jenny, it's what your number what?
My number eight.
Okay.
So, I liked it, but I knew that you guys were going to have it on your list.
So this is also the one on my list that I think the director was robbed of an Oscar nomination.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I think they were afraid that she would win again and show them up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that's all it boils down to, that if she was nominated, she was going to win. And mm-hmm. I feel like they cock blocked the two guys that were going to win. Sorry, the two people that were going to win, Catherine Bigelow and probably Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yep.
So those two are the people that definitely got blocked for some weird reason. I don't know what the political process is with that, but I feel, I know Adam Scott had a problem with this movie because he thought, the whole movie, he was waiting to see somebody killed. Okay. But I didn't see it that way.
Yeah,
I always take a movie for its art form, which is you're telling me a story and how you're telling me the story and how you're telling me, you know, how the method you go about doing it. And with this movie, I feel like she's just an amazing storyteller.
Yeah, and that's, to me, was the key to this film, is that you start out with all these little bits and pieces. You don't know exactly what's going on. Just like a real intelligence gathering operation, you get this piece, and then as the film goes on, it comes all together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then I also really, really like the fact that the whole thing with the military SEAL team is there was no stereotypical member. There wasn't a guy named Tex, and there wasn't the funny one and the serious one, but they were, you know, professionals doing their job, and they had a real kind of dimension to them. So they were definitely humans and not just like caricatures. And I just thought that was super effective.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, they made mistakes, and it just showed real people having to deal with mistakes that are happening in action. It's not like, oh, we're going to do like a big action movie scene. Yeah. Like that. No, we're going to fuck up, and we have to fix that and still go on with this mission.
Yeah.
And the other thing, filmmaking wise, I absolutely loved. Absolutely. Was the use of the lighting.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So perfect. Just for the atmosphere and just to help tell the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, and Jessica Chastain, who I love, her hair was like, you know, my favorite character in the film. Her hair was just amazing.
Yeah.
Well, also like, I just dig like how if it was a different director, she would have had more makeup in the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that was definitely a thing, a character thing, where you saw her when she got to Langley and stuff. Then she started dressing up more. Yeah. You know, it was more.
Well, I hope she wins the Oscar, and I hope she goes up there and says, "This one's for Catherine."
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
thank you very much.
Yes. Yes. And I'm very hopeful she wins, and I think she will. Hopefully.
I kind of hope she gets up there and says, "I'm the motherfucker who won this bitch."
Yeah.
I love that line. That line made me go, "Okay, I want to marry Jessica Chastain."
Yeah.
She's been so good. I have not seen The Help, but I loved Take Shelter, and she was maybe the only good thing in Texas Killing Fields, but she's so great.
I gotta see that. That was Michael Mann's daughter, I think, who directed that.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, really?
It's okay.
It's okay. I gotta check it out. excuse me. She was great in Tree of Life.
Tree of Life, yeah.
But yeah, I think she's kind of become like the Hollywood darling, where she's like in everything. Yeah. But it's funny because she said I got to see a Q&A with her for this movie, and she said, "Look, what happened was," she's like, "I would have been in movies earlier." She's like, "But just like, Tree of Life, Take Shelter, a bunch of her movies got like held up in post and stuff."
Okay.
And she's like, "So they all came out at one time. So it seems like I'm just coming out of nowhere." But she's like, "I've been like working hard at it." And she was really humble about it, and I hope she wins because she deserves it. And she's definitely the person this year who, if you really went by, like, hey, who deserves it, not who, like, politically deserves it.
Yeah.
This is a girl who should get it.
That shot, that close-up towards the end just gets me, like, welling up when she just starts to lose it.
Yeah, yeah. And I like how Kathryn Bigelow for this movie, well, for a lot of her movies, just the ensemble, she's really good. Ever since, like, Near Dark, she just knows how to give...
She does know how to cast.
How to pace everybody. How to pace everybody's
and
character.
The support cast in this is so good. Yeah. Just, you know, Kyle Chandler and,
Mark,
you know,
Duplass.
I loved it. And one of my favorite little, another one of my, my favorite actor who's in it for like a split second, Frank Grillo. He's in this.
Yeah.
You could barely hear him, but he's in it. And who else did I really enjoy? I enjoy the guy from Parks and Rec. What's his name?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Chris Pratt is amazing, and I like that he did his part, but he also brought in his personality. Like, he's funny, and he had that whole Tony Robbins thing. And
yeah.
That was something we needed, because the movie was so intense.
Yep.
And we needed the "I'm the motherfucker who found him." We needed that line, and we needed like the certain moments of like comedic relief. We needed those, because it was so intense, and yeah, it was pretty crazy. So. Very cool. I like that it's in your top two. So,
yeah, and I mean, for a while, if my number one, they battled it out.
Mine too, and this is how it ended up being. But I feel like on another day, this could have been my number two.
Like I said, my top three, any of them could have been there. It was just how they fell at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Jenny.
All right. So the funny thing about my number two is that when I saw the trailer, I said, that movie looks absolutely awful, and I will probably never see that ever. And it took me until I started hearing so many good things from every, like, not even just one person. It took, like, four people before I was like, okay, fine. It's nominated for stuff. I guess I'll just go see it. It's fine. And luckily, they got a screener. Ricardo and Michelle got a screener for it, so I didn't even have to go pay for it. I was like, I'll just watch it. It's no big deal. And one of my favorite movies of the entire year. One of my favorite movies probably all time. I really need to see it again, but Silver Linings Playbook.
So number six.
Yeah. I have not seen it yet.
It was surprisingly fantastic. I was not expecting it. I thought it was just going to be a stupid romantic comedy. Like, this is going to be, you know, Robert De Niro's playing one of those weird dad roles. And you're like, why is he doing this?
This is going to be like that Drew Barrymore movie with Sam Rockwell. And I forgot what that was called. But it was a very generic, like, family drama with, like, yeah. But this was nothing like that.
No, it was fantastic. I loved every bit of it. And I feel like it might be the girl side of me that put it so high up on the list, because it is kind of a romantic-ish movie. But it's got so much, like... so much harsh. I don't know. Like, there's just so much in it.
Well, the thing with this movie for me is that it's a romantic comedy, but it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like, these are people. And it's not even like that, hey, I know people that have this sort of illness. No, no, no. It's just like these people feel like, this is what I'm talking about, where these people feel like they exist somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like this is definitely happening somewhere. It was my number eight. It was number eight on my list. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I went to see it and I'm like, this is what every romantic comedy should aspire to be.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Where it definitely like made you laugh, made you cry, and like it went everywhere. And I think it's one of De Niro's like best performances of in a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, and hearing interviews with David O. Russell, he talked about how like this meant a lot to him, like to De Niro, meaning when they would discuss the script. I guess he either knows somebody or is really close to somebody who does have like bipolar disorder. And he's like, he would sometimes when discussing the script, he's like, he would break down. He would like cry. And he's like, that's what showed up on script. Showed up on screen was De Niro was like something that he needed, this story he needed to tell. And it shows because he's amazing in it. And, you know, I feel bad for him. And I feel happy for him. You know, all these different emotions. So,
and I've never been the biggest Bradley Cooper fan. And this movie, it's like anything he's in now, I'm like, I have to check it out. I mean, Place Behind the Pines is, I can't wait to see, because he makes you feel uncomfortable at times. You're like, why are you saying this or doing this?
Yes.
He makes you want to cry sometimes and laugh. And he plays the character so well, and he could just go over the top if he wanted to or play it a certain way. And he just makes it feel so real.
Yeah. That's how I feel. Well, it's another movie where it's the entire supporting cast, like Chris Tucker, John Ortiz, who plays his best friend. Julie Stiles, like, was rocking this movie. Yeah. I was like, wow, look at her.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Even the girl who played, like, his ex. Like, she has a very small part. She's kind of an unknown. But you're like, oh, okay. I get it, you know? And, yeah, everyone was great in it.
I think everybody deserved their nominations.
Oh, yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Definitely. Jackie Weaver was awesome. But yeah, it was my number eight. Jenny's number one.
Two,
sorry. And is it on your list?
Six.
Very cool. Silver Lining Playbook. My number two, which is going to be Kevin's number one, is a French film called Rust and Bone. Have you seen this, Eric?
I have not. I just, when I went to see Miami Connection, the theater, they had a poster because they're going to be showing it soon.
Oh, nice.
So,
yeah. You want to talk a little bit about it, Kevin?
This film hit me. It was a film that, just like Cabin in the Woods, I went and saw it like a day later after watching it. And it's a long and hard movie to watch at times. But the one thing that I responded to most is these are real people. Yeah. And we are all flawed people.
Yeah.
And we can be horrible people sometimes. But we can be some of the most amazing people you'll ever see. It's poetic. It's beautiful. I mean, a lot of the reviews I've read at certain times are like, oh, it can be kind of melodramatic. But I never felt that while watching it. It's just the way the film kind of plays out. And I really think Marion Cotillard deserved a nomination, because there are so many times where it's just a close-up of her face and you just want to start crying with her. She just has so much emotion going on. Just you feel her depression just oozing out of the screen. And I love the relationship. I love the use of music. The use of music is just phenomenal. And being someone who loves music and loves when I write, I'm always listening to music and going, oh, this would be great in this scene right here. And I really feel that, the director, Audiard really just did a phenomenal job using like Bon Iver and stuff.
I this was one of the movies where I had excuse me, it was a digital download for as a screener, and like you have like literally like 12 hours to watch the movie, and I watched it, and then my girlfriend went to sleep, we watched it together, and then I'm like, I have to watch it again, because or else I'm, you know, and I literally just sat and watched it again. I'm a big fan of this director. He's made some of my favorite movies. I know some people say, like, I've heard, like, well, he makes very cliche movies in a very original way. And I agree, but the original part of the way he tells them is they're very personal. You know, mm-hmm. Like, he makes them very personal, where it could be like, this is, like, a very generic movie. No, he makes it very personal. He did one of my favorite crime dramas of all time. Read My Lips. He directed the Beat My Heart Skipped, A Prophet, and this one, Rust and Bone. And again, it really spoke to me. It felt like these are real people that live somewhere in the world. And just like Kevin said, like, it's just like our human ability to either choose to be the worst people in the world or the, you know, and make connections with people and be the kindest people in the world. So it's a good, you know, just character stuff that some of the characters went through is really like, it's really like an emotional roller coaster. And I like when movies do that to me. And a couple of times I was like, no, don't cry, you asshole. And but yeah, this is amazingly shot. I thought it was really well
beautiful
shot.
Movie.
Yeah. And again, like Kevin said, great use of music.
The original score too, it's haunting. Yes, the Splott's use of piano, it just comes in and it's a very haunting score at times.
Yeah, yeah. And again, some of the lighting he used like for her apartment is amazing. Some just really well done overall. So this could have been my number one yesterday. So it just depends on the day you catch me. But yeah, that is my number two. Eric, what is your number? Give us a recap of your five through two, and then your number one.
All right. My five was Skyfall. Number four was Cabin in the Woods. Three was Moonrise Kingdom. Two was Django Unchained. And number one was Zero Dark Thirty.
Nice.
Very cool. Yes. Zero Dark Thirty. Kevin?
So good.
Okay. So five was Seven Psychopaths. Four, The Cabin in the Woods. Three, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Two, Zero Dark Thirty. And number one was Rust and Bone.
Very cool. Jenny? I like the overlap because now we get to talk about our honorable mention.
My number five was Cabin in the Woods, four, 21 Jump Street, three, Argo, two, Silver Linings Playbook, and my number one was Moonrise Kingdom.
Very cool. My number five was Argo, four, The Gray, three, The Master, two, Rust and Bone, and one, Zero Dark Thirty. I was mentioning to somebody that I feel like because I watched Zero Dark Thirty 3 times in theaters. And I know I've watched it too many times because, like, now I was watching The Following, which is a show on Fox. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why don't they just catch this guy and just waterboard him? And I'm like, my girlfriend's like, whoa, slow down there. I'm like, they could get a lot of information if they just waterboard him. They're not really hurting him, all right? But, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about our 10 through 6.
Okay.
Give us your list, Eric.
All right, so 10 is Argo. Number 9 is a film called The Tension, which is my high school film.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's about a Saw-like serial killer who's stalking a group of students at Grizzly Lake High School. And there's elements of time travel back to the distant year of 1992 when I was a freshman in college. And I just really liked it. I'm a sucker for high school films that are done well. And this one just it just was a lot of fun. So number 8 was Looper. I like Rian Johnson, and I really enjoyed Looper, despite all the, you know, the logic problems and everything. I just had a great time. Number 7, Damsels in Distress. Whit Stillman. I love me some Whit Stillman.
I didn't catch that. That's one of the ones that I it's a shame that I didn't watch because I also am a big fan of what's The Metropolitan.
Yep. And then on top of it, it's got Greta Gerwig, who I just think is great. She's got this heft to her. And I don't mean, I guess heft's probably kind of a loaded word, but she's got this emotional weight to her but she can do comedy, and I enjoy seeing her on screen, and she's really good. So no one else saw this. Oh, it's highly enjoyable. It's not like his earlier work in that, the earlier stuff, Last Days at Disco, was definitely more generationally bound. Yeah. But this is just kind of lighter and a lot more fun, and I laughed, and it went bright colors and. It's great little dance numbers. So,
that's what I like about Whit Stillman is that one of my favorites is The Last Days of Disco, just because, I mean, okay. I like that era. So
and actually, I'm realizing now that he's one of two directors on my list who did episodes of the show Homicide: Life on the Street, which I was a huge fan of. The other one, of course, being Catherine Bigelow, who did a Ooh. Couple episodes.
Mm. Nice.
And then my number six is probably going to be the most controversial. This is the one that people absolutely hate when I mention it. I saw it at – you know what Tug is?
No.
No.
Like this online deal where you can – basically you can set it up so that if you get enough people to pre-order tickets, you can show this film in a theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Film. Yeah, I've heard this. It's like a – you could get like a pre-screening of it, right?
So they did a – somebody did a Tug screening of Iron Sky at the Michigan Theater. And – are you familiar with this? This is the yes. Nazis on the Moon film yes. directed by a guy from Finland.
Udo Kier's in it, right? Isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Is Udo Kier in it?
Yes, he is.
Yes, I know what this is.
I had a blast. It was so much fun. The audience was laughing. I mean, it's Nazis on the Moon. I mean, come on. It'd be ridiculous. But I actually – it had a heart to it. It had kind of a message as well. And it had some political kind of poking fun at like Sarah Palin types and the hypocrisy of the international community. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun. And I know a lot of people, like I said, really hated it. And my question to them is, did you see it at home by yourself or did you see it with an audience that was laughing along with the jokes and that was appreciating the fact that it's a big B film that nods to so many other movies, including Dr. Strangelove, that just, yeah. And the soundtrack was amazing. It was a kind of mixture of heavy metal and some sound clips from the film. And it's got an international cast, so Australian actors, American actors, German actors. Yeah, I really had a great time with it.
It's one of the ones that's sitting on my queue. It's a Netflix.
We should do a movie night yeah. with everybody and watch it.
Yeah.
People. That's my advice. And go into it with the mindset that this is gonna be big, dumb fun with a couple of nice little nods to other things and a certain amount of heart to it.
Very cool. That's interesting. You're the first person to be like, I loved it.
Yeah. Cool. So I went with my brother. We were sat there laughing. I had a headache when we went in. I was there with a couple of friends were in the theater and they had a good time with it, so
very cool. And that is your number six?
Yep, that's my number six.
Cool.
Nice.
Kevin.
Okay, so my number 10, I just rewatched and it moved its way back on my list, is Dread. Yes. Love this. I need to own this movie. My number 9 is Ruby Sparks. It's the one movie while watching the movie I was like, I think they took my brain and threw it on the screen because it was things that I've thought of before. 8 was Argo. 7 is a movie, the only other movie in my top 10 that I've watched this movie like 3 or 4 times now is Goon.
I keep meaning to see that one. I've heard such good things about it.
I love it. I played hockey. It made me want to play hockey again. And Sean William Scott gives, if there were a couple weaker performances, I would say he gives one of the best performances of the year because it's just, he plays almost like a Lenny type character from Of Mice and Men, where he's just big and dumb and stupid, but very violent. And he's just, and he's lovable. And it also has Alison Pill, who I have a huge crush on.
Oh yeah.
And then my number 6 is Silver Linings Playbook.
Nice.
Cool.
I want to preface my top 10 by saying that Avengers was probably one of my all time favorite movies, but I didn't put it on my list because I think it's obvious that it's one of my all-time favorite movies. And so I just want to throw that out there so everyone knows that it's probably my number one, but it's not on my list at all. Anyways, okay, so with saying that, my number 10, I put Bernie. I just saw that one a couple, like last month on Netflix streaming, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I just saw Jack Black, and I was like, this should be interesting. And it was awesome. I loved everything about it. My number 9 was Dread. Number 8 was Zero Dark Thirty. My number 7, I know you guys hated it, but my number 7 is Chronicle. I loved it. I love origin stories. Did you like it?
That was fun.
I did too. I liked it. These guys hated it. So,
you know that
I hated the camera work.
I really like him in everything I've seen him in.
Yeah, he's been in something else I saw just recently.
Who the
main guy, the bad guy,
the villain? Yeah, he was in this one. Was I can't read it. The title, Lawless.
Oh yeah, no, was he? Yeah, oh yeah, he was in something else though. I just saw.
I think the right film. Let me see. Because if I'm thinking, isn't he in Friday Night Lights and On the Wire?
I think.
Was he on the? Maybe we're thinking of the wrong cast member in the movie. Are you thinking of the villain in it?
I'm thinking of Michael B. Jordan, who Chronicle about the found footage thing about the
superhero. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was in.
The black kid, yes.
And he was in Friday Night Lights.
Yes.
And he's on Parenthood. And
yes, Parenthood. He was on Parenthood, and he was fantastic on that. I love that guy. Yeah, I didn't watch Friday Night Lights, though, but. Ricardo was talking about Dane DeHaan.
Okay.
DeHaan. Oh, he was in Lincoln. That's what I just saw him in.
Oh, okay.
He was in Lincoln, too. And then my number six was Lawless. I need to see it again, but I love those guys. I can't not love them. Tom Hardy and Jason Clarke and Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
You know, I could not sit through that film. I watched about the first 30 minutes. I was like, I'm out.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I could just watch it because of them. I loved it, though.
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Jessica Chastain, again, another movie she's in. She was really good. I thought it was really, really well done, but it needed to be a mini, like a HBO, like miniseries.
Yeah, it could have been a miniseries.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed it. And then that was your number five? I mean, six.
Six, yep.
Very cool. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I really like Bernie from your list. It just barely didn't make my list, but that's one of the movies I really enjoyed. I enjoy everything Linklater does. He really kind of, even when he's taking risks, it's really good. It's really good what he's doing. I guess the only thing, I know people shit on like Bad News Bears remake he did, but I enjoyed it. I think for what it was, it was fun and yeah. So I don't think I've seen anything that I didn't like of his. So for my number, let's see my list. So my number 10 is a little cheat because I put a documentary, but in case people are like, well, just narrative films, then I have my backup. So my real number 10 is Euro Dreams of Sushi, the documentary. It's an amazing documentary about this 80-year-old sushi chef in that works out of like this like subway stop in Japan. And what it said about like the craft of anything. I mean, you could be a painter, a shoemaker, you know, whatever you are, whatever profession you choose. It says a lot about really taking pride in what you do, and it just kind of, it really spoke to me as like a writer and like a director about like how this guy has been doing it for 80 years and he's always trying. I mean, sorry, he's an 80-year-old sushi chef, but he's been doing it since he was like a kid. And so I think he started when he was like 12 or something, and he is constantly finding ways to better himself to this day. So, and he's still alive. You can still visit him in his restaurant. And it's one of the only, like, Michelin rated, like, 3-star, whatever their highest stars are, 3 or 4. It's a Michelin rated restaurant that's in a subway stop. So that is amazing unto itself. But I thought it really well shot, and, you know, it was really well done, I thought. But my narrative, number 10, is a movie where a lot of people shit on it. A lot of people didn't like it, but I did. It's Magic Mike.
I was wondering where this was going to come up on your list.
I know.
Yes, it's my number 10. I thought it's a really good character study on both like Channing Tatum's character and Matthew McConaughey's. For me, those two were the characters that stood out. Not so much Alec Pettiford, just because I kind of don't like him as an actor. You know, as a maybe I just didn't like his character. I don't know what it was, but I thought it was really well done. I thought it resembled a lot of like. You know, for me, it felt like, in a weird effing way, it felt like something like Jean-Luc Godard would have done if he was young and directing now. Like,
yeah.
Very, like, French New Wavey kind of, like, just like, hey, there's no real story. It's just these characters and these, you know, in these different walks of life. So, I really enjoyed it. And the whatever male nudity there was, it didn't bug me. It was really,
you know, who else I really liked in this film was Cody Horn, who played the sister that he kind of has a relationship with.
A lot of people, it's funny because a lot of people will say like, oh, that was the worst part of the movie. I didn't mind her. I thought like, there's people like that. Like everybody
she's
said
got
like,
this presence about her that I saw her in the movie Flipped. And I only watched that because it was filmed here in Ann Arbor. And she was one of the best things in that film. And she's got this like kind of light, fun, you know, presence that's not, I don't know, it's not forced. So I kind of enjoyed her the way she played off of Channing Tatum's character.
Yeah, I felt like she had to be the straight person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of people crapped on her because like, oh, she didn't do enough with that part. But I thought she did enough. I know people that are like that don't, you know, have a lot of expression in their face and, you know, their personalities are kind of weird. And I had no problem with her. I know a lot of people had a problem with her because she's a famous, very successful executive's daughter.
Okay.
So that's why she's in the movie. And I know a lot of people had a problem because of that. But I didn't. She was fine. I actually hadn't had a problem with any of the cast. All the supporting people were amazing. What's the name? Boomer? What's his name?
Matt Bomer.
Wrong last name. Matt Bomer is amazing. The guy from True Blood. He was good. Everybody, even the ex-wrestler that was in it. What's his name? I forgot what wrestler was in it. He played the older guy that was really huge.
Oh, yeah.
Mickey. No, wait. What's his name?
He's got like a jacked up
Kevin Nash.
Yeah. Yeah. He was great in it, too. So that is my number 10. My number 9 is Moonrise Kingdom. 8, Silver Lining Playbook. 7, Killing Him Softly. I know a lot of people didn't like this movie. I did. I liked what it had to say about a politics, America, and about the mob, you know, like the state of the mob in our time. You know, it's not this like whimsical fantasy version of, you know, the mob, you know, as people see it, like in Scarface or The Godfather. It's like, well, this is what it is now. You mean it's a weird business. So I really enjoyed it. Did you just get a chance to check it out, Eric?
I did not, and I'm going to because the guy who wrote the book it's based on, George V. Higgins,
yeah,
is one of those great early 70s crime writers.
The Friends of Eddie Coyle, right? Okay.
Yep, Friends of Eddie Coyle, which is an amazing movie.
Yeah.
And a great book, too. Isn't that, I will check that out eventually.
Peter Yates, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Who also did the movie I mentioned earlier, The Hot Rock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is my number 7, and then Cabin in the Woods is my number 6. Really enjoyed that. So
nice.
I think we went through our top 10, right? Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really quickly, can I throw out there worst movie of the year?
Throw it out there. Throw it out there.
Anybody got one?
You know
or
what?
Most disappointing, either one.
You're putting me on the spot. I have a lot of them, but okay. None that I can remember off the top of my head. No. Uh-huh. Give us yours while I think about it.
Okay. Dark Shadows.
Okay.
Well,
Shadows had a really great performance by Ava Green, and it had a couple of great moments, but I sat there about halfway through thinking, you know, they got Alice Cooper here, and they're doing all this great music stuff from like early 70s glam rock. If this movie went off the rails with Johnny Depp's character suddenly becoming obsessed with the music of the time and using that to woo the woman he's after, that would have been an interesting film. Instead, it just kind of degraded into a by the numbers, look at what we can do with special effects, Tim Burton mess. So that was probably my biggest disappointment.
Well, I feel like if I would have seen it, it would have been my biggest, that would have been it. You know how I feel about Tim Burton. He touched me when he made Planet of the Apes. And I haven't forgiven him.
Yeah, I got you. I hear you.
And again, he had such a great cast. Like Jackie Earle Haley's in this, Chloe Moretz, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Like I said, if it just gone off the rails in this out there music thing, it would have been fine, but nope.
I was really glad to hear that Ava Green will be playing Ava Lord in Sin City sequel.
Okay. So yeah. No, she was really, really good in it.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
good.
Very cool.
Safe House? Was one that I was disappointed
really?
In.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't bug me too much.
I thought it was going to be better than it was. It disappointed me.
I went in with really low expectations, so it surprised me.
Okay.
You?
Well, it technically ended up getting pushed back to this year, but I had really high hopes, and I saw it in May, and it's the funniest film ever, Gangster Squad.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I guess that'd be, yeah.
Technically, it came out this year, though, right?
I've yet to see that one.
Yeah. Well, Kevin saw it last year. He saw it.
And it was supposed to come out until the whole...
They had to cut the
stuff. But yeah, I had such high hopes for it.
I heard that that's what affected a lot of the movie. I mean, too, because... Did you see it with the stuff, with that footage in it?
Mm-hmm.
And it still wasn't good?
It still... That was actually probably the best part of the movie.
Really? Did you see Frank Grillo in the cut you saw?
I don't remember.
I'm sorry, I'm obsessed with Frank Grillo.
I tried to forget most of that movie once I watched it.
Because he was in part of the movie and his stuff was cut from the movie. So I'm wondering if... And I know a lot of people who loved this movie, but I wasn't one of them. So.
How were the fedoras in it? That's what I want to know.
Fedoras were amazing.
They were.
Best work they've done.
Yes.
Since,
If there was an award for best fedoras, I would say, as much as I hate giving it an award, that movie an award, that would get that award.
Yeah. Or best suit. Right.
Yes.
A lot of good suits.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I know we're trying to forget this happened, but this happened in 2012. Battleship.
Oh, wow.
I totally forgot about that.
Holy crap.
That happened. Yeah.
It's funny. Didn't we all three of us go see it together?
I think just you and I did. I think we talked Kevin talked himself out of it.
No, I think I was there.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. We all experienced the awfulness together.
You know what? I just realized what we were forgetting. I know it's because we were under the influence. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, yes.
I never saw that one.
Yeah. Even though I was under the influence, I was like, this movie is awful.
Yes.
There's only one reason I want to see that movie.
What is that?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Not enough of a reason.
Yeah, I'd love her, but...
Yeah. Don't go see...
Just watch Scott Pilgrim again.
Wait for Cable, I would say.
I'll just get it on DVD, so I mean...
Yeah.
I'll check it out at work, so I don't pay anything for it.
That works. But yeah, so that was up there. Yeah, I feel like Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and literally, it's funny because both those movies, that and Battleship, I was a little buzzed, and I automatically sobered up. I'm like, you know what? I can go, you know, drive a school bus full of kids right now. That's what this movie means. You know.
The thing that surprised me about that movie is that they should have waited till Lincoln came out and like released it like a week after.
Yeah, like hey, you know, go see the serious movie and then the fun movie. Yeah, but yeah, so it wasn't fun though. Don't let
Don't have high hopes for it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So that is it, I think. If you're gonna buy something off Amazon, buy through our link. Go to thefilmpodcast.com and click our little link on the bottom left side. And, you know, it doesn't cost you a thing. So check that out. Where could people follow you on Twitter, Eric?
It's IRENZERO. I'm at IronZero. And then my blog is restlesskind.blogspot.com.
Very cool. You could follow me on Twitter at Ricardo, ULTRERAS.
I'm at Janae, JEHNEIGH.
And I'm at K Zuberbier, that's ZUBERBIER.
There you go. And then what else? What else? Any other business? You should follow Adam Scott's, who is not here, but you should follow his blog. It's called shootingthescript.com. They have a lot of reviews and such. And stay tuned. If you like really nerdy film stuff, Eric Peterson, Kevin, myself, Adam Scott, Jenny I might convince her to participate. I don't know if she's in still, but I know Brian Sauer, Bob Freelander on Twitter. We're all going to do like this ongoing series for a while that we're gonna do. And it's about the films of Canon, the Canon Film Group. Sorry, and we're gonna like watch all of them. Yes, all of them, and do 4 films per month. That we'll talk about and stuff like that. So we'll have like a roundtable discussion about the great films of the Canon Film Group. So stay tuned for that. And thank you again, Eric, for filling in.
No problem.
And until next time, have a good week.
Have a good week.
Good night.